This is Taking Care in Business, a podcast that dives into the topic of corporate social responsibility from many different perspectives. Host Vicki Bolson is the founder and CEO of Bolson Group, a unified marketing company located in Indianapolis. Bolson Group is the first B Corp certified company in Indiana, but Vicki understands that you don't have to be certified in corporate social responsibility in order to use business as a force for good. Join Vicki as she talks about why it's always worthwhile to take care in business.
Hi, Sawyer. How are you today?
Oh, doing great. How are you?
Good. I see you have your Butler shirt on.
Oh, yeah. Gotta represent the Bulldogs. So.
Well, one of our guests today was a guest lecturer or is a guest lecturer at Butler. Have you ever heard of Michael Petry?
I have not, to be honest, but probably since I was in the communications school.
Yeah, I think he lectured in arts administration. So
okay, that would make sense then.
Yeah. Well, I'm super excited about this week's guests. They are the greatest people. I've known Michael for a while, and I'm just meeting John, who I feel like I know because I've heard about him so much over the years. But, you know, I've talked repeatedly on the podcast about how I believe that all of us, no matter our income level, that we all have the ability to give of our time, talent, and treasures to make the community in which we live a better place for our neighbors. And today, our two guests are the principals of a company called Cape Fletcher. And it's a company that works with nonprofits that are seeking to grow their base of contributed revenue and with for-profit companies seeking to rethink the way they do sponsorship. And well, that's just kind of a simple way of telling you that the important work that they do, and we will get into when we talk about their mission, their purpose, and their ways of fulfilling that, more fully during our conversation this morning. But hold on, I want to do that again. That paragraph made no sense. Okay. I don't even know what I was trying to say. Hold on, let me see. This is the first time I've ever done this. Like I've had to do my intro with Sawyer anyway. Let me reread my thing here. Okay, I know what I did. I paused in the wrong place. Let's just start my whole intro over again from after we talk. Sawyer. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm super excited about this week's two guests and you're going to see why, as we get into things, you know, I've talked repeatedly on this podcast about how I believe we all, no matter our income level, that we have the ability to give of our time, talent, and treasures to make the community in which we live a better place for our neighbors. And today our two guests are the principals of a company called Cape Fletcher. And this is a company that works with nonprofits that are seeking to grow their base of contributed revenue and with for-profit companies kind of seeking to rethink the way that they do sponsorships and their giving. So that's a simple way of telling you the important work that they do, but we're going to get more into their mission, their purpose, and their ways of fulfilling that more fully during our conversation this morning. Michael Petry and John Minella have a combined 40 plus years of philanthropy experience. First, Michael. Michael Petry is a native Hoosier, and we've crossed paths before in the various organizations he has served as either CEO, chief development officer, or as a board member. He has such a delightful, engaging personality, and he's beloved by every single person that he crosses paths with. And I know this because every time I mention his name, somebody just oohs and ahs about him. And then there's John. John Minella is a native of West Virginia, but he moved to Indy more than 20 years ago. He's a fundraiser through and through. And by reading his bio, I'd also say he is a server, a giver of time, talent, and treasures. And in fact, both of them are, and they always have been. And I think that's why they're now running this company with such an important mission. So thank you for joining me today, you guys. And I want to get right to it by asking you, how and when did Cape Fletcher, the vision of this company, come about?
Well, Vicki, first, thanks so much for that very kind and very generous introduction. I think we owe you something after that. That was
all true. It's you.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. But so the idea of creating some consultancy really was born out of just conversations we were having with friends 5 or 6 years ago. and other colleagues in the industry. And they would come to us and say, would you help us with a project? And Michael and I started doing some one-off consulting gigs. And we were using that as our impromptu travel fund. And we would, you know, we would complete a project for someone and then we would have a great vacation or something. And it was a lot of fun. And we realized how much we loved it and how much we were enjoying helping other customers and clients and other nonprofits. And so fast forward to the pandemic. And when COVID hit, Michael and I cooked through all of Ina Garten's cookbooks. We created and tested every craft cocktail you could possibly, you know, create.
And that was okay. I was okay that with
that. That was okay. Yeah. but we got to a point where we thought, okay, let's do something else. And so we started having conversations with people like you and with our mentors and with other friends in the industry and other consultants in fundraising, but also outside of fundraising, and said, is there a market? And as it turns out, there is. And now more than ever, organizations and institutions are coming to us and saying, help us rethink the future of giving and help us rethink the future of philanthropy. And so out of that, in late 2020, Cape Fletcher was born. And here we are today, loving our work and having a great time and fulfilling work, really helping nonprofits around the community to achieve great things.
Well, what do you think makes Cape Fletcher unique?
All right, so I'm a little bit of a data nerd. I love data. I think data helps us make better decisions when coupled with kind of the human nature of relationships and emotion, all of that. But I think data plays an important role. And so as we were piecing together what Cape Fletcher might be or might not be, right, through this discernment process, we had conversations, data, with 87 different people, contacts, friends, family members, associates. And we chose not to do, you know, like 10 or 15, but literally it was 87. And we have this giant spreadsheet of all the data, all the thoughts that they shared with us. And we wanted to build Cape Fletcher, since it's from ground up, it's a new company. We wanted to build it specifically on the feedback from all these conversations, incorporating just the best morsels, the best, the cream of the crop, if you will, the best of the harvest. So we have that lucky opportunity when you are building it from the ground up to harvest those nuggets. So I think that's part of what makes Cape Fletcher unique. But with John and I, when we have a client, they literally work with us. We don't you know, have a junior staffer that somebody will end up working with. They work with John or with me or with both of us for, you know, most of our clients, frankly. And that means they get both of our experience together. We think that's important.
Which is broad.
Yeah, it is broad between the two of us. You're right.
Yeah. You know, I also think that the name Cape Fletcher is unique. And Michael, you told me how you came up with that. You got to tell that story.
Sure. So two places that we love, frankly, but I'll leave you hanging on that one for a second. We didn't want the company to be named like michaelandjohn.com or, you know, like something with our names. And we wanted to be fairly neutral so that, you know, it wasn't tied to us or a place or a time type of thing, right? And so we picked two places, Cape Cod, that we absolutely love. And actually, we started talking about these conversations 5 or 6 years ago. You know, what if we would, dreaming, while we were on Cape Cod on vacation? I still remember exactly where we were. And then Fletcher Place, which we've called home, you know, downtown Indianapolis, amazing historic neighborhood. So we just combined these two places into one smushed up fictitious name that doesn't really exist anywhere in the world.
At least we don't think.
Yeah, we could create one maybe.
Yeah.
No, and I Googled it when I first heard about Cape Fletcher, it popped right up. So I think you did well. So, you know, for you guys told me this and your great prep documents that you sent me, I did not know that for nearly every year, charitable giving has increased. Okay. So I am curious how the pandemic affected, you know, that. Was 2020 the one year it didn't increase?
That's a great question. believe it or not, 2020 was the best year ever in terms of charitable giving. People, through their individual giving, through bequests, you know, estates and wills, and through grants from foundations, they were all three up to the point that it was $471 billion with a B dollars just in the United States given in 2020, the highest year ever, even when adjusted for inflation over the past three generations or so. So the one year that did dip was about 5 years ago or so, with the recession and such. But this year did go up. We saw it go up in 7 of the 9 sectors, actually. People were responding to Black Lives Matter, to the pandemic, towards, frankly, a lot of people weren't spending money going out to dinner or traveling. So they did have a little more money to help to make a change and impact in the community. The one area that we did see some giving go down, I mentioned individuals, bequests, and then foundations. We did see 2020 corporations give less money, but we know many corporations, of course, did struggle throughout the year.
Well, and I think it's important to note that the need was great across the board in 2020, you know, as companies and as individuals and organizations were working to fight against the pandemic, and we're working to try and help solve and to help, you know, advance some of the diversity initiatives and so forth. People were interested and excited to give a little more. And also the markets did well, which also helps to drive giving and drive philanthropy.
I think that people had to be creative with their time, talent, and treasures. I mean, the treasures part is the, you know, the giving, but what about time and talent? How did that change during the pandemic?
Ways that we, I mean, all of us, right, on this conversation, plus people that we know, families that we know, life was shaken upside down. Mm-hmm. What we thought was normal, what we thought we knew, suddenly was no more. We were questioning a lot of things. And I think it gave everybody, as we're seeing with people changing jobs, starting new things, exploring new hobbies, whatever it is, it gave us a chance to pause and to evaluate, to take stock. The pandemic is, it's not over yet, right? Was and is horrible. If there is any silver lining to the cloud, it's this opportunity, I think, for us as corporations, us as individuals, us as a community, to really just take stock.
Yeah.
And then make some adjustments based on what we do discover.
And Michael, to your point, and Vicky, to your question, as people are taking stock, organizations became nimble, they became efficient, and they had to learn and rethink the way that they engaged volunteers. You know, food banks were, instead of having Saturday work sessions with hundreds of people, they had to think more efficiently. And it's just fascinating what the resolve of the human spirit is to watch as organizations come together to make those changes and to still be able to do the work that they did before.
Yeah.
Now, and even in some cases, increasing their output.
Yeah, we just, as a team, Bolson Group, volunteered at Gleaners last week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're really having a need. It was just, there's so much I could say about just how it speaks to exactly what you said, John, that they had to like rethink the way they do things. Yeah. They had to rethink how they donated, you know, food at a time where the need had, you know, increased so much. And they were giving a tour about how they did it, explaining how they did it with less people. And one of the things that I found really interesting, and I think Michael, you'll relate to this, they quickly hired a lot of out of work performers.
Wow.
And Kate, like people in the service industry.
Sure.
And I was like, how smart. It's like a pocket of people that are out of work. And like, then they can, you know, so anyway, that was one thing. But also on the line that we were packing boxes, they said that they used to do the same task with twice as many people. So speaking to that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, when an organ, you don't want to turn away volunteers. And so you find something for them, but now they're volunteers, you know, they're refocusing on making sure they have enough, but they also were working with less because there are less volunteers because of the, you know, the pandemic. So, but it's true. I mean, every company that we talk to, and we have a lot of the same types of clients, Cape Fletcher and Bolson Group, you know, we hear it all the time, like the ways that they took the chaos and they turned it into an opportunity.
That's right.
You know, because you can't, there's nothing else you can do. You know, you can sit around and cry about it, or you can get better.
Get up and do something about it. Yeah.
Right, right. Learn from it. So what do you think coming out of the pandemic, what does it look like for nonprofits, for just philanthropic giving as a whole? Like, what are the trends that you see?
John, I'm going to take retention actually as my topic. I'd be curious what John says, but I'm going to lead with retention, because we all, as a community, as individuals, we all stepped up to do something, to your point, Vicky. Volunteering, writing a new check, donating a product, you know, food to a food pantry, whatever it could be, over the past year, year and a half, which also meant a lot of new donors for many, many institutions, not for all nonprofits at all, certainly, but different institutions were impacted differently. I think what a lot of nonprofits now need to figure out is, over the past 15, 16, 17 months, this increase of new donors, first-time donors, how do we retain them? In the US, it's less than half of the donors who gave 1 year will give the next year. I mean, that's a crazy churn, wow, right? Yeah. So if you think about client retention, if you're a for-profit company, you will lose more than half of your clients from 1 year to the next. Not because you, quote, did anything wrong or they don't like you. We have pretty low retention rates for donors. So with all of this huge influx of donors, I think it's important on the staff and the board, this is not staff alone, the staff and the board, to figure out how do we build the relationships with these people who have given.
So I think, Michael, to your point about retention, I think the idea of using these new digital technology tools, Zoom and WebEx, are really going to be impactful for organizations and how they think about doing business, how they think about reaching out to customers, how they think about reaching out to donors. Certainly we're all ready to go back in person and to see people and to have lunches and have drinks and so forth. But I think using Zoom and WebEx as a touch point in the donor process and in the stewardship process will be key. And we're seeing people of all generations who are more attuned to the digital world right now. So they know how to use Zoom. They have Zoom on their phones, and there's going to be an expectation of some kind of a hybrid environment. And I think that's going to be an interesting adjustment for not only nonprofits, but for-profits as well going forward. And there's needs to be continued discussion around that.
I saw some of the coolest things during the pandemic. Things that I think, digitally speaking, things that I think should just be incorporated into everyday stuff moving forward. You know, the virtual fundraisers and, yes, you know, all, you know, panels via Zoom, and so mostly successful things. Some were a little wonky, but I think that people are going to have more time on their hands now, because I think a lot of people realized that you can do things differently. Did you see anything really unique that really stuck out that somebody did, one of your clients, or something that you admired that was done through the pandemic digitally?
I have to say, I feel like we as a social sector, the nonprofit, but I'm going to call it social sector more broadly, we went into that kicking and screaming. Zoom, WebEx, all of the digital content is not new. And we have been, for whatever reason, I mean, somebody could write multiple dissertations on this, avoiding it and saying, no, we can't do that, as opposed to, yes, we can. It's a both and opportunity. And our hand was forced over the past, you know, year and change to provide this content. I also think it's a way to reach people who may have some type of mobility issues or transportation issues. They can't come to, whether it's a museum, or they can't come to your humanities lecture, or, you know what, maybe it's a financial literacy training, right? It's some type of life skills. I think this is a both and situation that we were, as a sector, sadly behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Vicky, I think some of the performances that stand out to me are some of the virtual choirs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember early on in the era of the pandemic and Zoom, organizations were trying to do virtual performances and so forth. And the technology wasn't quite there yet for everybody to use. Now, there were professional organizations that had the technology at their fingertips, but how it has advanced over the course of the last 15 months to where I saw a high school show choir performance that was magnificent. The Indianapolis Symphonic Choir has done a couple of virtual performances that were spectacular. Symphonies around the country have done this. And then the way that I've watched a couple of our clients do workshops, particularly around diversity now, where they have their board, where they have their staff, and they bring in diversity consultants. And while you're not in person, you're pretty darn close to feeling like you're a part of the actual experience and having these facilitated conversations. So with the growth and with the continued investment in the technology, I think it's getting so much better.
Yeah. My youngest daughter is in show choir and they did a virtual performance. And I thought, how in the world are they going to do this? But they each sang their solo from home, sent in the recording, and then their show choir leader, advisor, whatever. She's amazing. Put it all together. And it was on Channel 13, I think, of course, like, you know.
Wow.
Called and said you should air, you know, being a publicist and all. And, I mean, it was it just those kinds of things. Yeah. And I visited museums virtually and all kinds of things over the time. And I think I just agree. I think that, you know, we did go into it kicking and screaming, but we did. A lot of things were learned from it. And some really wonderful things came out of it. I know that I sold my event and entertainment division of my company to the man who was running that. His new company is called Elevate, but he exposed clients to doing like fan club things online, which I think is super cool. You know, like we wouldn't have had that opportunity before. A concert's, you know, canceled and people are left holding the tickets, but they were given a chance in the interim to get on to, you know, do a fan club and meet the artist, you know. Yeah. Like, those are just some really great ways to take and to think differently and uniquely in ways that maybe became stale to us, you know.
Well, and I think about one particular organization that really thought long and hard about how it's a performing arts organization, and they opened up their space and their facility so that young students, high schoolers who were auditioning for college, you know, they were doing various musical theater, they were doing piano, they were doing, you know, instrumental auditions that couldn't be in person. They were virtual. So they opened up their space, their theater, set up the recording. They did it for high schoolers. They did it for college kids who were doing professional auditions, and gave them this wonderful space full of technology so that they could perform and do what they would have typically done in person. And I thought, what a great use of the organization, the space, and it's just a great, great outreach opportunity.
And John, as I'm thinking about some of our nonprofit colleagues, whether you're on the staff or maybe a volunteer or a board member, this is a little bit of an inflection point of how we do philanthropy, I feel like, as well as we're talking about technology. In 2020, 13% of gifts were made online, which 13% seems, I would have thought it would be larger if you would just ask me to throw out a number, you know, maybe 30%, 40%. 13% was an increase of almost 50% of the year before. I know 13% was the highest percent ever. I think the year before or was approximately 8%. That's a huge increase. So put on our nonprofit hats. If you run a nonprofit or if you're on a board, how many clicks does it take to make a donation, right? If you can increase by 4% or, you know, get to 13% of your gifts online, do they have to click 5 times? How hard is it to find that button just to give? Is it on every single e-blast or newsletter that goes out somewhere as a way to give. If not, you're missing an opportunity that just increased 50%, right? So I think we have to have our antenna up for those of us somehow involved in the social sector to be aware of how technology has changed and then harvest it, make use of it. Don't fall behind like we perhaps had as we were talking about content generation prior to the pandemic.
Vicky, this is your world too. You know, so let's take all of those people who have given electronically, that could be their preferred method of communication. How do we take and create a philanthropy strategy, yeah, a donor engagement strategy that's electronic, you know, e-newsletters, and let's renew them the same way that they're giving now, because they're probably comfortable doing that.
It's funny. First of all, I want to say it's like Michael read my mind, because I was going to ask the question that you basically answered, which was, how do we take this, you know, shift in using technology more and learn from it in philanthropic giving? So you read my mind there, but and you're right about the marketing and communications of these kinds of campaigns. I mean, our approach, I think, is very similar to your approach, which is to really treat each client as a very unique organization. Mm-hmm. And we have these data, you know, points, that we've discussed, but they're statistics. That doesn't mean that fits that organization that we're working with. It's sort of what I like to call a starting point. And then you dig into that organization and see if it's on trend or what is happening with it, what is unique, yeah, to their stakeholders, and devise a marketing communications plan that is going to work for them. And oftentimes it involves the fundraising arm, like you guys and all the vendors, to understand what each other are doing, so it's streamlined and it's multi-purposed and the content, you know. And so that's our approach. It sounds like that is so similar to what your approach is.
I think I've learned it from you. I mean, we started working together, 10 years ago or so. And I feel like one of the biggest things I remember taking away from our time working with you when I was at the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir is the value of listening. Maybe that's because my background, my college degrees are in music, listening, of course, but I think it's listening to the client. You can listen and you can ignore it, or you can listen and you can find out what the data is, what's the intel that they're telling you, or what are they not telling you, right? What are they not saying also is listening. And then really tailor that opportunity, that need, that plan, that proposal to exactly the data that they are sharing with you, because they give us a lot of answers. Just like in philanthropy, I think the absolute best tool is to make the ask. Yes, if you don't ask, they won't give. But second best tool is to listen and see what that prospective donor or a donor that you're hoping to renew or maybe increase the level of giving, just listen to what they say. Listen to what excites them. Listen to what else is going on in their life and use that data to tailor something that really speaks to them. So I guess I should say thank you to you for teaching me this over the past years.
Well, it seems kind of obvious, you know, it's not really anything that, you know, I bottled and sell. I mean, it's just literally.
But you should. You should.
It seems like common sense, you know, so.
But unfortunately, it's not, is it? I'm guilty of it. All just glaze right over it.
Well, it's more time consuming, you know, it's more time consuming to treat each partner. I call clients partners, is an individual organization, because you do have to listen and see what makes them unique and what makes them tick and how to work with them. I think that's another thing that's important. You can't assign one way of doing things. I mean, yes, you need to be we're process driven, but we, you know, you gotta be flexible and in the process and maybe even in the delivery of the process in order to be successful with particular clients. And I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about positioning So there's your, you know, your mission, and then there's positioning. And positioning to me is what makes you unique.
Yes.
And makes you different from your competitors. And then it's marketing that and communicating why you are unique, what your niche is. And so I guess if our positioning is that, you know, we are better at listening and such, then that's great. But I also say that our positioning is that, you know, we go down to, we want to work with organizations that use business as a force for good. So you take these things and then the sort of kind of client that you're working with. And it seems like you guys have got that down as well. I mean, when you're working with the for-profits, you're really focusing on listening to what mm-hmm. the for-profit is trying to accomplish.
Right.
Is that fair to say? And then 100%. How do they take what they're trying to accomplish it, and who do they partner with in order to do that? Is that correct?
And helping them think about giving as a bigger strategy. You know, how can they make a really strong impact in their community? How can they set themselves apart by the good that they're doing? So absolutely, it's 100% what you're saying. It's listening to them, helping them realize, here are our priorities. Here are our philanthropic priorities. Now let's go make it happen. And let's make it happen in a big way.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I could talk to you guys forever. I'm looking at all my notes here because I have like all these things I wanted to talk to you about. I want to end with something that I found to be interesting with what you sent me. What is the number one reason people make a donation?
It's a great question. We're giving away the special sauce, I guess, aren't we? Truly, and not to distill it down too much, it literally is because they were asked.
Yeah, you told me that, and I thought that was just, I think I've heard that before, but isn't it crazy?
Yeah. And, you know, everybody plays a role in the ask. Some people, if you're a board member, or maybe you're on the program staff, and you're saying, I don't want to ask for money, that is A-okay. You know, your role is not to make the ask. You get to say thank you to somebody. Or you get to host that person to take a tour of Gleaners, we were talking about, after they made the gift. And just say, look at what you made possible. Look at what your gift did. Mm-hmm. So there's something for all of us to do. Even if it's not making the ask, there's a role. So yeah, making the ask, it's the number one thing, but there's still something for everybody.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I have loved talking with you guys. It's kind of weird. I'm a little socially awkward these days because I've been so, you know, isolated and getting together in like real life with people. Like, I'm just like, whoa, this is so foreign to me. But I would say that we have got to have a cup of coffee or something sometime soon.
I would love this. This feels so good. This is
yeah. Yeah. It would be so fun to get together and just, you know, chat about life and work and stuff. So
I will be in touch.
Oh yeah. I mean, seriously, this was maybe one of my favorite conversations I've had on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. And we love listening to the podcast. You have, so if people haven't listened through your scores and scores of content, like, turn back the weeks and months. There's a lot of great content from people who, some of them I knew, some of them I didn't.
Yeah.
I have a lot of notes. So yeah, really good content you're sharing with the community.
Oh, thank you. Tell people how they can find you guys. CapeFletcher.com, org. Which one are you?
CapeFletcher.com.
Okay. I was like,
yes.
Okay. CapeFletcher.com. And we'll put that on our website and all that kind of stuff too. But
and we're always up for a conversation with someone. It doesn't have to be about an engagement. If they want to talk and they have an idea, let's throw an hour on the calendar and let's just jump on Zoom or phone call or, you know, get a coffee, whatever. We love to talk philanthropy, so, and meet other people as well. So we would look forward to that.
We'll do it all day long.
Very cool.
Great.
Okay, guys. Thank you. We'll talk.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki.
I just want to thank Sawyer Benj, our producer, and our show sponsors, Selflessly and Charge. If you'd like to nominate someone for Taking Care in Community, you can visit our website, takingcareinbusiness.com, or email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, or download Taking Care in Business wherever you get your podcasts. If you love Taking Care in Business, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review, or share this episode on your social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Taking Care in Biz. That's Taking Care in Biz, B-I-Z. If you have questions or comments, you can also email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks to our sponsors, Selflessly in Charge. And until next time, take care in business.